And welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Mind Sculptors Podcast, where we help you sculpt a winning mindset. I'm your host, Callie. Let it out, Ian. Let it out.
I was so tempted just as soon as you started, just go like...
I'm joined today by two lovely folks over in Boston. For now, is our good friend. It's the guy from Beantown. It's Ian.
Yeah, hey everybody, it's King of Beantown here. Until I go and become legally married to Gritty.
How's your air quality in Boston right now, Ian?
Honestly, in Mass, it's not that bad. I'm aware that literally everywhere else it's garbage. And I've been getting screenshots of our air all day.
East, right?
Yeah.
Boston's farther north than I think it is.
Boston's pretty north. Yeah.
It's also further east than you think it is, and all the smoke's drifting like southwest.
Yeah. I know in Philly it's really bad right now, especially because not only is there the Canada fire, but apparently there was also a Jersey fire, so it's the culmination.
That's sort of redundant. I mean,
yeah.
Jersey's always on fire, right?
Take a second.
to give Jersey credit, I did have this epiphany the other day that I did grow up in the Jersey of Massachusetts, so I feel like I really can't.
So Boston,
Worcester specifically, but yeah.
Also joining us, as you have heard and seen, is the cause of this fucking fire that's over top of the eastern part of the United States.
Serial arsonist. Like, unreal amounts of arson. If you knew how many public libraries I've burned down in my lifetime, it would shock you.
It is the one, the only sick robot, otherwise known as Reed. How are you doing today, buddy? Are you breathing okay?
No, not at all. Just sort of ridiculous. Just campfire going on in the front line, like at all times. It's not great. Definitely not as bad as New York, but like, holy moly, it is not great here.
Yeah.
I like genuinely, and like, I can't think of a time anybody on the East Coast was ever worried about that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like genuinely like a like shocking thing to me. For those of you who don't know, Canada is burning. And
North Ontario and like Western Quebec specifically. But that effectively equates to like the entirety of like the East Coast and like Midwest of Canada is just like covered in smoke right now.
Ironically, Canada's Burning is the name of my new rap album. So that's really cool.
Great one. Yeah.
Speaking of,
no,
have
what?
You listened?
Come on.
Yeah, okay. No. Okay. We cut you off earlier on this. You gotta take a better road here this time.
I am. Listen. Yeah.
I hope you're leaving us shaming you about the transition in the cold open, please.
No. So I have been listening to a lot of the. So they did. So you remember how for Black Panther they like Kendrick Lamar like made like a whole rap album for it. Mm-hmm. They did that again with like Lil Uzi Vert and Future and Lil Wayne for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, and it is so fucking good.
I mean, the soundtrack in the first movie I listen to all the time because it slaps.
It is
so
better than the
hard
one. Yeah. It is better.
It is better. Damn,
the movie and the soundtrack is sell. Better.
Yeah, I'm so nervous to see it now because. Better. Yeah, we've talked about this, and that movie is like one of my top three movies of all time. So now I'm like, is it actually better, or I'm gonna have to yell at you when I come out of the theater? Yeah.
Across the Spider-Verse, like I walked out of that theater, and like my wife and I just looked at each other, and were like, I just watched maybe like one of the best movies I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, I was just like, that was just art from beginning to end. I went and saw it again last night. And
twice
it's just it's so good.
Actually, That's something I've never done the 2 feet for like going and seeing a movie in theaters. I don't know.
Okay, so
I only do it when it comes to I see it with one person and I want to see it with someone else too. You know, right. I mean, like it's more of a social thing.
Yeah. Not like I need to go see this a second time in theaters.
Now, like, yeah, I really need to spend $20 again, right? Like,
yeah. Well, so I've only done it a few times. So the first, like, one of the times was for Avengers Infinity War, and at the time, I had MoviePass before MoviePass was like terrible. So I was literally every day, just like $5 for popcorn, free movie. Let's go watch Infinity War again. And it was like, I got nothing else going on this afternoon, which is a sad statement on that period of my life.
I wasn't going to call it out. Yeah.
That was what I did. I also did that for Thor Ragnarok. I went and saw a bunch of times with MoviePass. Just because that movie like just genuinely gives me dopamine. But this movie I went and saw it by myself last night. Because I was just like, every frame is a piece of art and I need to examine this movie. And
I do plan on getting
so good.
The graffiti from the first movie as a tattoo somewhere sometime, but not in the current history, but like, it's so good.
Possibly. I would be, I don't know if you saw my tweet the other day, but it was just like, apparently my thing is, or my vibe is, specifically, who voices Vi and Gwen? I can't remember all of a sudden. Haley Steinfeld. Yeah, Haley Steinfeld voiced animated characters because she voiced both her. Gwen and Vi. Yeah. And I was just like, evidently that's what I do.
In general. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mazdav.
It's fine.
This is a really interesting transition point in the conversation.
Great, yeah.
I also loved how when you were talking about what you were interested in, I watched as Reed's eyebrows slowly crept upwards, like, what in the fuck is going to come next?
Yeah, I just, like, there was no warning. Like, it could have gone in so many different directions. And I was just like, oh, right? Great.
Okay, like, you never know which angle I'm going.
Just, this is a very normal one with well-contextualized in Cal lore. Like, this is fine. I'm now comfortable.
When you started eventually clipping things for shorts. Yeah. When you eventually start clipping shorts out of our podcast, like, just the zoom in on Reed and I's eyebrows, just like...
Oh my gosh, honestly, if this was just the podcast, I'd be happy, but I don't think our listeners would be, because every time I don't talk about CEDH I get yelled at.
We're still trying to figure out how to do a Vintage Cube episode on Into the North without just like pissing our entire audience off, because we're like, it's not a large audience and they're only there for the CDH discussion, and like, it's very well borne out for when we do like the Dan episode.
Imagine if you Rickroll your entire audience with a really clickbaity title.
Do I tell the Dan story for the podcast?
Yes, 100%.
Okay. So for the home audience, I told you this at Minneapolis.
Probably, yeah.
So I am about to get my Kiki Jiki tattoo. I'm lying down about halfway through, right? I go, what could I possibly listen to while I'm getting a tattoo? I know. Let me hear Brayden and Reed and Morgan talk about a pedantic format that doesn't matter for 3 hours.
Yeah, for like two and a half hours.
Great idea. Yeah. So I'm like, let's hear my good friends talk about Dan Dan, because why the fuck not? And so I'm sitting there listening to it, and Brayden at this point, I believe, was like a week out of getting his 4-1 tattoo, which is the power and toughness of Dan Dan. He's talking about it, and I hear the words out of Reed's mouth, I can't imagine anything more cringed than getting a CEDH tattoo. Yep. As I am currently on the table getting a C.
Can we see it at least? As,
yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, you can enjoy.
Man, how fucking cringe.
I have gotten many compliments on it. I'm not feeling bad about it, but it's really nice to know my dear, dear friend Reed thinks I'm a fucking cringe lord. 100%,
yeah. Hey, at least I don't have you muted on Twitter. That's a bar.
That's true. And honestly, that's a bigger thing than most people can say. Yeah.
You have Morgan muted on Twitter.
I think
we confirmed this.
Oh my God.
We confirmed this in Minneapolis.
Well, yeah,
at like, dinner.
I feel like we've had this. We run over this of just like, as soon as somebody posts like something that is like outside of my interest, I'm just like, oh, okay, cool, muted.
Even, okay, but here's where we could even take this a whole step further is. So Ian, you and I are really good friends, right? Like you, but we live like kind of far away from each other.
For 2 seconds, I have posted some unhinged things on Twitter. Yeah,
and I get entertainment value out of the unhingedness. No, it's what actually gets you muted is like Cal posting about March Madness for like 2 days straight. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, that's fair. I don't need to see this.
I would never not talk about. I would never only talk about Taylor Swift or
anything. A
specific TV show or
no.
Never. Definitely not something I have done. I think so one of my favorite things about Reed is the fact that I was in, this is kind of a cool thing for me because speaking of the Dan Dan stuff, because it was like, I was in the room when Cal was introduced to that format. And like, I can like draw a direct line to that Rhystic Studies video getting made and us sitting there in Seattle.
I think I was the first U.S. Dan Dan game that I think Reed.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you played because it was at March 8th. Yeah,
because it was the two of us sitting there.
Sounds so silly. Let's play it. Yeah.
You asked me to play it, and I said, that sounds like my nightmare. And
you cast. The first time we played the game, you cast a turn one Mystical Tutor.
I don't know.
Mystical Tutor. I was just like, yeah, fine. Resolve is great. Super okay with this.
You're like, yeah, it's in our shared deck. You've broken the system. You're brilliant.
I have gamed the game. Okay, actually why we're here. Title of the podcast.
I mean, we can just keep BS. I mean, this is like how we get UCAS in the hundreds.
I honestly love just sitting here at Shitty the Breeze with all of you guys because it is some of the funniest shit that ever happened. But for the sake of retaining any viewership.
I mean, we've lost them at this point. The actual point is that you just have to drop a shortcut to the actual topic at this point.
Yeah, of course.
You're like half an hour into the BS. Of course.
We're so sorry. You know who we are. Click the video description to find the actual content.
There's a chapter. Just go find it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've noticed, but I called this episode here in our recording overview a web of victory. And that's definitely not a reference to any movie I've seen recently.
It's such a good topic, and I really hate that you're going to call it a web of victory. This is probably one of the most helpful topics in all of the Mind Sculptors catalog. And you're like, I've made a Buddhist Spider-Man reference here.
Because Cal pitched the episode to me, or like Cal's just like, hey, can I get you on for an episode? And I'm just like, sure, what's it about? And then Cal gives me the title for the episode. I'm like, great, what's it about?
Fucking choice. Great. Killing it.
Listen, I can get you good SEO. That doesn't mean that you're going to understand.
Like, is a web of victory the thing that breaks the EDH? And then people are gonna be like, oh, okay.
Well, you just keep adding the subtitles on as you like keep producing clickbait. So you just don't, like, have a 50 word title that's all clickbait itself.
But that's bad SEO.
You have to put it all in the tags for the
That's right.
Yeah.
No, my favorite part about the
episode that's tagged Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it so much.
Tags, just get it.
Hashtag smog. One of my favorite things about the set review videos that we do is every time I post a link to it on Reddit, 10 times out of 10, I get the same comment. No. And I'm just like,
the word no.
Yeah, just the word no. Yeah. It's because
whoever posted it thinks like, oh, I have one-upped you intellectually by posting the word no. Of course not.
My favorite thing is where when people like are just like, why are you talking about it like it's this big set? Why are you trying to like sell it or whatever? And I'm like, what? It's like. I'm trying to get you to listen to an episode. What do you mean? Why would I pitch you on listening?
Entertaining on your podcast.
Why are you trying to make this thing interesting? I don't know. Maybe because I made a video on it. I want you to watch said video.
I really wish you would answer the question. Had the video last 15 seconds and cover no topics.
This video could have been a short, right? I mean, yes, but there's a reason it's a video. It's because I want you to watch the full hour.
The other good one is when we do the tier list videos and people will go through and like go in and just be like, can you just post your tier list here as like written out? And it's just like, What do you think this is?
Can I not click on your video and also learn everything in the video?
But
is
also,
is that possible?
Absolutely. You just skip to the end of the video. Like,
yeah.
You just.
For sure. But at least they clicked on the fucking link.
Yeah.
My favorite one. I've said that a lot. A few weeks ago, there was a person who, like, I think it was on our March of the Machine, or no, it was on our Obnixilus episode, that in the Reddit comments was just like art, like made some shitty comment about like us trying to like advertise the podcast in Reddit, and then was like, anyway, any cards that you guys are interested from this set? And I was just like, you know, you could just make your own post about this, right? And so he kept arguing with me, and I was just being, and I was just kind of being like sassy back. And it basically ended with me where I was like, I mean, if you don't want to like I don't go into a store and tell the person, I don't like what you have. He goes, well, I'm not in a store. Do you want me to come to your YouTube video? And I was like, I mean, yeah, I'd love more engagement if you're willing to give it to me.
Click that link. That'd be awesome.
if you want to, that'd be great.
The comments right now.
We could. That was like a few weeks ago. Somebody in our comments got into a fight. And I was just like sitting there, just like, I'm just not going to say anything. And I'm just going to watch it burn. Because I saw our views go way up.
No, it's actually Cal making burner accounts to get into arguments in the comments of Mind Sculptor's videos to boost engagement.
Honestly, I think we should all just start like doing that shit more
Ian, packed right now. Next video you post, next video I post, you and I get in each other's comments and just argue with each other constantly, back and forth. It could be about fucking anything, but we just sit there.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh my God. So we have gamed the YouTube algorithm. How do we game the Twitter or not the Twitter, the CEDH tournament scene.
You had such a beautiful transition, and then you said fucking Twitter. You said Twitter.
I know.
Burned it all to the ground.
It's okay.
I do like, though, how long me and Ian committed to the bit of doing the, you know, like the substitute teacher thing where like, you get them started about talking about their personal life, and you just like keep like just poking and prodding and egging them on for a bit. We got like a good 25 minutes out of Cal this episode.
You can get a fucking hour out of me. I don't know why. Yeah. Listen, I've hosted solo like radio shows before. I can sit and talk about anything for a while. Yeah,
this is also prolonging the content. this conversation has become meta to the point
that wasn't back to meta joke. Anyway, Cal, I'll stop. We can do the actual thing that gets people to listen to us if you want.
So basically what just happened there is they were playing stacks and I have an actual win condition and was able to break through the stacks, which is why stacks is not a good CEDH tournament archetype. Okay. So, you know.
I have several results that beg otherwise, but that's okay.
Okay, but Winota wins the game. Kind of.
We're talking about Winota. Winota's just like also not a stacks deck, but anyway. Yeah.
No, my God, here we go.
That discussion's for another episode.
So was the first 20 minutes of this podcast.
There's a difference between fully off-topic discussion and like magic related but still off-topic discussion, because
there's someone at home right now going, they still haven't even told us what the episode is about.
The thing is I'm actually actively trying to get to the topic, but I have severe ADHD and I'm with two of my favorite people who are also fucking hilarious. So it's destined to fail. So let me ask you this. So you both have had a lot of tournament success within CEDH. Both of you have won big like tournaments. You're both MLC champions. Both of you won the MLC.
Technically speaking, between the two of us, we have 100% win rate at the MLC.
It's actually just full nepotism if nobody knew at this point. It's just you have to be on to win it. I mean,
That's why we're not doing it this year, is because
we ran out of people you like.
Fuck you, Morgan.
Morgan doesn't get his chance. It has nothing to do with the fact that I'm moving and life is crazy. It's 100% because I can't get, you know, Reed or Ian that second MLC victory. It's just, you know, I got to rest on the laurels.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
But so when you go into a CDH tournament, you have, you know, you fly to fucking Denmark for a CEDH tournament, or you're going to Seattle or you're going to Pennsylvania, wherever.
Sure.
What is it going into those things that you're doing to like the key things you're thinking about when it comes to like prep work, whether that's for you as a player, like just like getting practice in, or what deck you're choosing. And we could start in any place you like on that. Mm-hmm. But what is it that, like, before you even get on the plane or get in the car, that you're doing to get ready for these tournaments? And I guess because one of you is not actively like suffocating half the country, Ian, you can start for us.
Yeah, sure.
That's a great way to decide who goes first in a game of CDH. Is like whoever's most
currently choking
involved.
A nation.
Yeah, exactly. You're going last. Ian, go first. Yeah,
you don't get to go first. You're a slight domestic terrorist.
I get to go first in every Team Turn 3 stream now.
Oh my god.
I did my fucking time, Cal. You know this.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway. Oh my god.
So anyway, Ian, so when what is it you do before you get on the plane, you get in the car, and you're heading to these events before you even get there?
Yeah. So, I mean, what I'm always doing is analyzing the meta, right? Like, there is never a day that goes by that I'm not currently like, what's seeing play? What's important? What do I need to know? And then for context on that, I would love to just throw a little bit of like, there are resources out there, right? Not to toot my own horn, but my channel, I do coverage of top results all the time for a good reason. I think the information is really important. There's a reason most of my content is that, right? Other things also, like I know the EDH top 16 website's in there right now. I would love for people to pay attention to the numbers on the website, because all of them are clear and indicative of how it works. I know many people who are like, oh, I clicked on one of these first lists and this was a 40 person qualifier event, and I'm going off because they're like, oh, they won, they were undefeated, and it's like, okay, they played four games.
Yeah, they were
right? Like
four rounds
at a local tournament. And it's like, not to invalidate those performances, some of the local tournaments I've played have the best player quality of my entire career. Mm-hmm. But that isn't always the case. And like, they could be no proxy locals, like all of these things. So like, pay attention to what you're actually clicking on, like get a little context there. Right. And then like, look at the numbers, like, yeah, okay, this deck has a great conversion rate. It showed up three times. The same pilots played it.
Yep.
Maybe don't look at that.
There's a reason. There is a reason, right? Like in my like power rankings that I did with Tyler a few weeks ago, I was talking, like, one of the reasons I was so high on Tivit was I was like, of decks over X amount of entries, it had the best conversion rate, right?
Yeah.
So it was like,
cracked.
The deck's stupid. But regardless, like, that's one of the things that I've always like, one of the things we talked about in that episode was just like, look at these numbers, but also you need to contextualize these numbers. It's the same thing with like MTG Goldfish, right? Where like you look at MTG Goldfish and you just have raw data in no context for it.
I feel like people have sort of lost the context of like small Japanese tournament as a descriptor for things on MTG Top 8. And like, it's just, that's just disappeared from our vocabulary, and it's still insanely true now.
It's
and
for so CDH. Relevant.
Like,
oh my God, the amount of times people will be like, oh, it's a God of Commander tournament. I'm like, great.
Great. Yeah, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's a data point.
That is something you can look at. Yeah. But just like, don't hold the same weight for each of the events, right? Like, if I'm going to hold a lot more weight on, like the ones that I mainly look at are like any tournament that an eminence puts on that has like a 120 player cap, right? Their main series events, not their locals, their main series events. Anything Monarch puts up, the Chaos Treasure series, the Mox Masters, like those are things
big
I'm going to be looking for.
Semi-weeklies
for,
and monthlies and stuff.
Exactly. Those are the ones I definitely like put the most weight in for sure. But so like I'm analyzing the meta, right? And not just saying like, oh, these decks are played. And you can say that for as much as you want, but like, if you don't know how the decks actually work, probably not going to help, right? You can be like, I understand blue farm, but I don't get what happens when they resolve an Underworld Breach. Like, dog, pay attention, please.
Like, it's sort of interesting because you can actually, I feel like you can sort of, not to cut you off, Ian, but it feels like you can sort of.
You're just suffocating him. You know?
Yeah, something like that. You can almost split up. You can almost split up tournament prep by like, familiarity/skill level overall, where like I feel like what what event prep looks like for different people is dependent on how familiar you are with all the decks in the format. Where like, if you're not that familiar with a lot of decks or like combos, or like or maybe you are familiar with decks, but you're not familiar with the underlying reasons why those decks work and like the strengths of them and like why you would play those decks and like choose them over other options.
Yeah.
The preparation in that case looks very different from if you're already comfortable, you know what you're looking for, you know what a deck needs to do, or like, you know, the role that you want your deck to play and you just haven't found the deck yet. Where if you're not super comfortable with much of that stuff already, you should be either trying to familiarize yourself if you think you have enough time, or you should be going all in on a comfort deck and just trying to optimize that and just get really sharp with those lines, versus once you have a bit more experience with the format and have contextualization of like why decks are good, what decks are good, what decks are good in those ways, then you can start like actually considering like meta considerations overall, what specific slots looks like in those decks, different builds of those decks going into tournaments.
I mean, so like for context, I like to tell people all the time that my prep nowadays does not look like my prep when I started, right? When I started playing CEDH and doing the tournament scene, I was one of those people that was picking up a good deck that I knew was putting up results and doing my best to study the things around me and doing my best there, right? And that was maybe in my period after I was just like playing what I liked, right? But, you know, I've probably put in 1,000 hours at least in this game. And so my prep nowadays looks more like, huh, this deck's pretty cool. I think it actually attacks the meta in a really interesting way. All right, I'll play it twice and see how I feel.
I'll goldfish like 20 hands and it's like, oh, okay, cool. This is
To be fair, I'll play in a real pod twice. I will goldfish it probably 300 to 500 times.
Like you do a lot of like looking at hands and being like, what's the distribution like here? Does it do the thing consistently? Like what are my early turns looking like here? Is this
Yeah, right. Play? And you're not trying to like simulate an entire game, but you're trying to say like, the gameplay that I know I need to execute, how do I get there from this opening hand, right? And like doing that, I think helps people so much. It's like one of the things I first suggest when I do coaching.
That's also I feel like that's something that like a lot of people it's like a hard like thing to flip over to once you get experienced and like comfortable with the format, is that you stop looking at least I do, I think this is the case for you as well, Ian, of like you stop looking like decks first, like strategies first for the most part, and then like instead what you do is you're like, you have an idea of what the meta is like and you have an idea of what attacks the meta and what like does well into the meta in terms of like specific cards and specific interactions, and instead of starting with a deck or like something like that, you start with this glob of things that you want to happen when you play a deck in the upcoming tournament, and then you find a deck that produces like as close to that, like, or encompasses as much of that glob as possible. And if the deck is good enough on a raw power basis, then you go like try that one out and go try to play.
And it really does change per person too, right? So for example, I'm just going to give like a breakdown of like what goes through my head when I go through these things, right? So I'm at a little bit of a, I think I'm in a different place than a lot of players. And I think Reed, you're closer to this, right? Where I am a public figure who performs well frequently, right?
Yeah.
So I can't play a deck where it's like easy to king make someone else by attacking me. I can't do those decks anymore. Like a lot of like really commander dependent decks, like I can't really play Paco and Halden in a big tournament. I can never play Quark Sakashima. I can I am having a lot of trouble playing Winota lately.
Like, I was about to say, I was like, I don't think you're ever gonna get to play Winota again.
there's a genuine solid chance that I won't.
The deck is like, Winota is one of the few decks that's like powerful enough where like for the right meta composition, even as a public figure, you can probably still bring it and do well, but like it changes the math on a lot of my choices, it changes the calculus on like what you can actually play and bring to tournaments.
And I've had one of my favorite examples of a tournament. I was medical TMI or whatever, but like I was passing a kidney stone one weekend and I was like, I feel like garbage. I've woken up in pain for the past 72 hours. Like I cannot play a mid-range deck in this tournament or I will actually want to die. And I played Winota in that tournament and I made top 16. It was great because I would go, all right, I'm gonna play the match, do the thing, maybe it would take a little bit long, but I didn't have to think while in excruciating pain because I was just like, I mean, you do think obviously there's lines of Winota, but it's not nearly as intense as like
you're not like doing, Yeah, you're not doing like large strategic things interlocking with tactical decision making. You're just like, there are like three outs in my deck, and I just have to know what those are and know what happens when I draw them.
And then we're just exactly like, right.
Yeah,
and like on top of it being a deck that doesn't have like a million decision points, it was also like I know the deck by heart, right? So things like that went into those decisions as well. Comfort with the deck is huge. It really is.
It's so
I think something people should be thinking about in general in the meta is. Understanding of the deck, right? Which I think people understand like on a base level a good amount, but like we always go back to the Marchesa Magda story, right? Like people didn't know what the hell it did. They let it get a bunch of free wins that Koibito was like, oh, this never would have happened in my local meta. They would have stopped me 100 times, but people didn't know what the hell was happening. And that's a real thing. Like I know when I was playing Sisse at the last Chaos tournament, there was a bunch of times where I was like, all right, I'm going to untap this thing and activate my commander. And they were like, okay, cool. And then I was like, and now I win the game. And they're like, excuse me. And I was like, yeah, the game's over.
Yeah. I mean, so, you see it all the time. Like it happened in a, like when I was playing, local tournament in Boston, not Boston, Buffalo. It's just like, okay, I'm going to cast this Neoform sacrificing a dork. And they're like, wonder what this could get. Like, is this getting like a, could be getting a Thoracle, might be like a famous for this stuff. And like, great, get a Grand Abolition. You're dead.
Yep, every time.
Yeah.
My first ever tournament I did coverage for ended the same way. And people still fall for that shit 3 years later. Yeah. Like, it's insane.
It's just, you just have to be, it's just being comfortable and like knowing what, just being aware of what's going on for a lot of decks and like just knowing, it's not even like, even for Magda, like, it's not even knowing specifically what Magda does. It's like a combination of like trigger points in your brain of like, oh, that's an instant speed ability. Oh, that puts stuff into play. Okay. Like there's probably fuckery that happens here if I remove something, like even if it's not their turn. Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why, like anytime I'm at a table with like a Kinnan, right? I just sit there and like point at the Kinnan. I was like, if we don't remove the Kinnan, we're going to lose to the Kinnan. If we don't remove the Kinnan, we're going to lose to the Kinnan. And it is always correct. I am never wrong.
I mean, well, yeah.
Yes and no. But
But like, yeah, the rule of thumb, I guess we're talking about like higher level tournament prep here. But for anybody listening, if they want like a quick takeaway is that if you don't know what a deck does, just kill the fucking commander. Get it dead. Get out of here.
Favorite story. This is the biggest blunder I've ever seen in the tournament. Josh from Elder Drunken Highlander, playing Brawlin and Shabraz, goes to put the Curiosity on his Brawlin.
Or Shabraz. Goes to kill you.
No, Brawlin. Yeah. Brawlin's the dude, right? Goes to put Curiosity on the commander. The opponents after this game revealed that they had like 4 or 5 pieces of interaction that could have countered this spell.
Yeah.
He goes, okay, I'm going to attack. I'm going to draw a card. I'm going to move to my cleanup step, infinite loop. And they're like, oh, we die here. And then, they all reveal like 6 people revealed counter magic. And you're like, y'all didn't possibly pause to think that maybe this might be a combo.
Is there like, I'm not just like playing curiosities because I don't want to draw an extra card every turn. Like maybe there's something else going on here.
Insanity.
It's just, oh, you mean this is Niv-Mizzet with white? Okay.
It's just like, it really isn't like knowing specifically what the decks do. Cause you're never going to know like the absolute specifics of what like somebody's deck is going to do for like every given deck in a tournament.
But there was something there was something you had said to me, and I can't remember if this was in Minneapolis or if this was in Philadelphia for Oko. But you had said this to me where it's like you have played enough Magic where you can figure out what most decks do. Like
That's sort of what I was like getting around to is that like you don't have to know exactly like the cards that the deck has in it. Like you don't need to know their exact deck list. You don't need to know like exactly what they're doing. You just have to have like you have to like build up an experience and an intuition of just like, yeah, like these types of decks are going to want to do this type of thing. And that usually involves this swath of cards. I don't know if they're going to be playing all those cards, but you have to be aware that those are like probably in the deck somewhere. or like those are potential tutor targets. And then you just need to like hold that in your mind when playing against them and when making strategic decisions and tactical decisions, and just being like, okay, like I have a general idea of what they're going to be doing. And it, like, when it comes down to it, I can do like, you'll do like the in situation assessments where it's like, okay, they now have a tutor on the stack. Now we walk through and try to figure out like what they're actually going for, in case that like they have like a creature tutor on the stack that's to board. Okay, let's figure out if this is going to be a problem that we need to deal with like now, because mm-hmm. we need to like talk through all the tutor targets, right? But like, just in general, it's, yeah, it's not so much about like knowing all of the decks exactly. It's just like you just have to build up an intuition on like what a deck is going to likely be doing and what cards that entails. And then right. also have like just be ready to have like what I would call like, again, like mental triggers or mental alarms set up for when somebody casts a card that is outside of your normal evaluation of like, these are staple cards in the format, or these are what like a lot of decks are playing. And yeah, like, you know, like when somebody casts a curiosity targeting one of the commanders, you go, oh, okay, like, I don't know if this combos. Let me read your commander. Let me like, yeah. let me do some amount of evaluation on like what this is doing. Cause I might not, like, you walk into a game like that. If it's another deck, like maybe, I don't, like somebody's playing like some, I don't know, like some choose your background commander, and then cast a yeah. card that I've never seen before, I'm not going to be like, okay, yeah, fine, it's like probably bad. It's going to be like, okay, yeah, that's on the stack. Yeah. Give me a second. I'm going to read everything that I haven't read before. Like, I saw this deck and just make sure nothing like yeah. really is happening here, right?
Yeah, and obviously, like, don't take 30 minutes, but, you know, read the cards on like, the table. I don't think a judge is ever going to be like, yeah. how dare you try to understand what's happening?
Yeah, exactly. And CDH, a lot of weird cards. You should just, like, mm-hmm. make sure that you're not just, like, mentally, like, glazing over stuff just because you haven't yeah. seen it before. Or just, like, you, like, right. have evaluated it as bad in the past in a generic sense. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. just because it's bad in the abstract and bad in deck yeah. building doesn't mean it's bad in this situation.
One of the things that I think is a really interesting thing, like a good example of this, is speaking, like when we were at Oktoberfest, was John from Genstone Mine played that Vowel deck.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. every, mm-hmm. like, I played yeah. against it like three or four yeah. times, and every single time I was like, after the second time, the third game, I was like, I know what this deck does. I'm going to be able to handle it. And I was just like, this is good. I was like, what is happening? Like, there are just some things where you will look at it on the surface and you'll be like, oh, this isn't really that big of a deal. And then you play against it and you're like, what's going on?
I guess we're like sort of outside of the range of prep now, but I yeah. like, this is just like general advice, but like, just, you shouldn't be like, a lot of people have I think it's fine to, in discussions about decks outside of tournaments or outside of events or whatever, and have discussions and have biases about whether or not you think a deck is good, or whether or not you think like a certain set of slots and decks yeah. are good or whatever. As soon as you get into a tournament, it's no longer about your biased view of like, oh, I think this deck is garbage, I would never play it in a tournament. You're now playing right. against somebody who's playing in a tournament. Your abstract biased opinion on it doesn't matter anymore. It's the yeah, now the yeah, concrete. Yeah. What's actually happening in the game? Is this actually a threat in this game that right. you now have perfect, to evaluate on?
Perfect example I have of that is I played in, this was at Punt City 2. I played against Elminster, which is not a deck I take yep. seriously. It's a yeah, it's but, a two yeah. color, fun, scry, do some humility stuff, right?
Yeah.
But at the time, it got a turn one Elminster out.
Yep.
The deck's a lot better in that circumstance.
Turns out, yeah.
Turns out a 5-mana Planeswalker on turn one's really good, and then an immediate Academy Rector following.
Yeah.
That's a very Yikes. Different situation, especially in a Winota deck where I literally cannot handle humility.
So let's shift back here a little bit for a moment.
Go back to actual prep.
Yeah, so yeah. like... you said something earlier that I thought was really interesting, where it's like you have this idea of like a glob of things that you want your deck to do. How are you yeah. coming up with that like glob? That's like such a weird, I can't wait to title this chapter in the video of coming up with the glob. and people are going to be like, what the fuck?
They're like, oh, they're off topic again. Yeah.
Most of it comes from what Ian was saying earlier, right? About just like, you have to stay in touch with what people are playing. You have to stay in touch with like what the new spice is for whatever, whatever people are like coming up with and brewing and I don't know, swapping around between a bunch of authors and like playing testing games on and stuff. You just have to be aware of like what's happening, which means a lot of the time as well, just playing a lot online in varied play groups with a bunch of different people that you've probably never played before, and just like getting games in and seeing stuff that you've never seen before and seeing new stuff that people are doing.
I was gonna say, when I started CEDH, I was aggressively mid. Like, if I'm being honest, like, I was not fantastic at the game. And a part of that was like, you know, still learning the format and whatnot. But like, then I proceeded to have COVID happen, and I was stuck at home playing games, right, for a long period of time.
Forever.
I got really into a mid-range deck, and then I played like, I don't know, something close to like 500 or 600 games during that time period. And the context on how everything worked changed during that. And I started to get it, right? Like, sometimes that really is, you got to cut your teeth a little bit. And there's plenty of people out here who know that. Like, that's not like, I don't think we're, you know, breaking the bank with information.
I don't think we're special at all.
New reps is actually really good. Yeah. But like,
and like, a lot of people in the CDH community at this point have done their reps. It's just it's just something that like you need to hear at least once when, if you're like getting into the format and you want to get better, is just like, you just got to play the games with the assumption that like you're going in and trying to get better.
And you're going to lose a lot.
When you first start. Absolutely. Get ready. Buckle up.
So much losing.
It's like, And if you're like me and actively play bad decks, you're going to lose even more. It's okay. I'm on Tivit now, so I'm at least at like 30%. Oh my goodness. So, okay. So you've gotten in the car, you've arrived at the airport, or you've arrived at the hotel.
Night you before haven't packed your deck, because we didn't cover that.
I forgot about this. I need this story for our audience, because I know the Into the North audience has probably heard this, but for the mild, small cross section of our audience that doesn't listen to your podcast.
I wasn't even referencing that, but that's great.
This is a really good story.
Do you also have a story about this, or was that just like an abstract joke, Ian?
I was making an abstract joke because Cal hadn't mentioned a deck. And then Gavin said, "Oh yes, remember this very relevant story."
I think I've done most of the major tournament missteps at this point in my tournament career. Of just like having made all the fuck ups. So I did, So the one a while ago was winning a tournament without an Imperial Seal in my deck because I just forgot to put it in, and I was learning that fact after the tournament, which is great.
Shawnee's done that too, actually.
Yeah.
Didn't Shawnee do that with Malcolm Timna, where wasn't there a card in his deck you were like, why wasn't it in there? And he was just like, I didn't have a copy of it. And it was like, I would put it in if I had one.
That was for Tivit, the most recent tournament.
Yeah.
And then so the one that Cal's talking about is that Punt City, the first one. I showed up with what I thought was my Thrasios Timna deck, and I opened the box and it was Cody, and that Cody deck does not have real cards in it. And this was like just not a thing that I wanted to play at that tournament at all. And I was just like, I'm not doing this. So I was like, great. I would really not like to play that deck. Also, sorry. I noticed this, the night before, like 3 hours before midnight, which is when Reg closed. Mm-hmm. Great for the deck list. So I went through my open battle box and was like, okay, I still have TNT, like CST or like CBT from MLC in my like random decks box. And this is like close enough to Sacred Druid, which is what I was on at the time, that I'm just going to like put enough of this together and then see if I can pick up cars before the event from vendors tomorrow when they start opening and see if I can get it to work. So I think I was missing like 12 cards or something that I couldn't find. So I ended up having to take 12 of the double face cards and write out written proxies on them. Except every word of text. Some of those cards included Malevolent Hermit, which is a long card to write on those. Someone's Safekeeper, also not great. Sacred Guide, also not fantastic. Survival of the Fittest, also a very long card to write out. I spent like a good hour and a half writing out my cards on just like, or maybe not like an hour and a half, but like it was like close to an hour. Just like
Reed was basically at the CEDH equivalent of writing on the chalkboard after class.
I will not forget my deck.
Or like standing in line for registration, like writing out your like decklist registration for a PTQ or something.
As a judge, it one of my favorite like is people. I've said, why do I keep saying that tonight? Jesus. Is the people who will come up and it's like you have done final call for decklists. And they walk up and they're like, all right, here's my deck list. They're still writing as they're handing it to you. And then they don't have their name or anything on it. And you're just kind of like, can I at least get your name?
Like, you're just one step at a time.
Like, step one should be your name. Step two, like,
did school teach you nothing? those zeros for not writing your name down.
I have gotten so many deck lists from players and tournaments that don't have names on them. And it is infuriating because you will have to try and hunt somebody down. Like, obviously, any good judge would get it, look at the person, and then say, hey, you need to put your name in, which is what I do now, but not at my first tournament. learned that the hard way.
I have to go hunting through like a 150 person tournament room trying to like identify the deck by what people have in their hands and on the board and like cross referencing with the deck sheet that you're looking at.
Yeah.
It's great. Great time.
It's delightful. So speaking of, so we were talking about the night before. So remembering your deck, what else are you doing the night before? You know, Ian, I know you like to get, you know, super drunk.
I don't think that's what we should be like encouraging people to do, but yeah, I'm an alcoholic, but, you know, it's fine.
I mean, you're from Beantown, what else would you be?
Yeah, I'm Irish and I'm from Boston, like, I don't know what you want from me.
If you could whip out like little harp and start playing some Celtic folk music, that would make it better. But
a lot to break down there. I don't even want to start it. No, but honestly, like the night before, what I'm always doing, like almost every single time, is going, okay, cool. 300 goldfishes before I submit my deck list in 2 hours. Go, 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 go. And then I agonize over 5 or 6 slots in the deck that I think are more important, and what it, like the little like last minute, just like that's out, that's in, that's out, that's in, that's out, that's in. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing the night before, genuinely.
For the record, you shouldn't be doing the last minute swaps. Like, realistically, day before the tournament, like night before the tournament, you should have it all locked in. That being said, the number of times I sat in a hotel room with Morgan and had like an hour and a half or 2 hour conversation of like, okay, are we playing Priest of Titania or are we playing Phantasmal Image here? Are we like, which one of these three cards, like which two of these three cards are we playing in the deck?
I mean, Ian and I had that conversation before Oktoberfest where we sat like there and we went through both of our lists and we were just like, all right, what do we think? And it was just like, I kind of want to be on this card, but I don't know what I should take out for it. What are your thoughts? And it's just like sitting there and going through that. And I very much stand by it that last minute cuts also can save you some time.
Here's something that I will always recommend. And this is a, like, you don't need this, but it helps. As we've a lot of these allegories you're hearing, like, talk to people who do this, right? Like, do your best to get friends who are going to want to go to the tournament with you, who are going to want to like make those last minute cuts with you, because I am, you know, I have a reputation as a deck builder. I have a reputation as a tournament player. The amount of times I've forgotten a fucking mental misstep in a deck are innumerable. That's just the one specifically that I don't know why that's always my gap.
You do it a lot, actually.
The card's aggressively medium, in my opinion, but I should probably
should always just be on it anyway. Yeah,
I forget what the card was. I was looking at your Tivit list one time, and it was before you updated.
It was Gilded Drake,
and it was Gilded Drake. Yeah, I was just like, is there a specific reason you're not playing Gilded Drake?
It's because I got it. Like, my initial shell from the list was I got it from someone who didn't like that card, and I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense that I'm not playing it. I never put it together because it's just like, you assume the staple's going to be in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
It was so
you copied over, spend 5 minutes looking at it, come back to it like the day later, and you completely forgot about all
the
stuff.
It was 20 something cards different than the original list, exactly. But I still used it as a skeleton, right? Like,
So, okay. Now I'm going to fast forward for a second. So you've gotten through the tournament, and we've talked a little bit on the show, and we talked about this with Lua. And both of you right after Oktoberfest is going through the tournament, how to kind of deal with the tournament itself when you're there. But now let's get to the end of the tournament. Right. And this was one of the parts that we talked about a little bit in that episode, but we didn't really get too deep into. You've now made whatever the cut is, right? It's usually most tournaments now are cut to top 16. We're not doing the cut to still like top 40 or whatever anymore.
There's still like some top 13s I've seen, I think.
Yeah.
Like small tournaments doing that. And then, like,
I was at a small tournament that did top 10, but it's all kind of in the same vein.
Yeah. Like top 10, I can get anyway, but like without even getting into it, just you cut to top 16, you cut to whatever.
Yeah.
Now, like, where is your head at, Ian? Like, you know, you're getting into this, you are walking into a table and you're sitting down next to people who have played through 2 days of grueling. Where's your head at?
So, I mean, the really interesting thing is, like, when you start playing by where you're seated, you start to play with these people a good amount, right? Like, you start to know, like, they, like, oh, okay, this person I've been seeing at the top tables for the past couple of days, I might have even played against them, like, where are they at? Maybe you get, like, a kind of idea of what they're playing. You know, sometimes you have someone who gets up the table next to them and bitches, and they're like, I can't believe they beat me on turn two, and you're like, okay, they're playing a fast deck, got it. I've never seen the deck before, but I know they just popped off and kicked that person's ass, right? So that's a general impressions you can get. Historically, Monarch used to be open decklist top 16, right? Like, you couldn't look at your opponent's decks during the match, but you could see it for like the 40 minutes you had before your top 16 started, right? Which was interesting. That was more for the online space, but that's not like as much as they were before.
Not
anymore. But for example, like, I know for a fact, like, there was one of the old Monarch tournaments where I was like, okay, they posted the top 16 overnight, and I looked at my pod and I went, oh shit, this is a nightmare matchup. But I knew it. Right. And so I was playing for that scenario. Exactly. So gather as much information as you can, right? One thing to usually know, and I hate speaking in truisms, I hate speaking in definites. But like, one thing that is most likely the case is that everyone in the top 16 knows what the fuck they're doing. So you can't rely on people being stupid. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And like, I genuinely mean that in the most loving way. Right. But like, it is a thing. Yeah.
That is also like the other side of that. And I feel like we didn't talk about that is like leading up to just sort of to put this in, because I think it is like a actual like piece of advice that like a lot of people like are like should hear, especially if they start playing or come up playing in play groups where people know what's going on, at least like with their own decks and what they're talking about. In early, like in non-cut rounds of tournaments, you have to be like, or you should be very in tune with it sort of sucks to call it this, but like weakness at the table of like identifying if people at the table actually are tracking what's going on or like have an idea of what you're doing and what's happening. And if they have no idea what is happening and they sort of like letting that be known and like nobody at the table is correcting anybody else, taking advantage of that.
Now, on the other hand, I've said this before where the way I build my decks is like I try to idiot proof them, right? Where it's like I want to be playing a deck that is going to be okay if there's a moron at the table. Like, and I know that sounds mean, but like I have played in enough pods and tournaments where there's just somebody who yeets you into the sun and it's like, okay, well, I want to be able to not die from that.
Also, one the counterpart of I like, corollary. The counterpart of corollary to that was what Ian was saying, though, about once you get to top 16, that's no longer the case. You're not really sniffing out weakness a lot of the time. You get to top 16, people are going to know what they're doing. You're not like also, people might be. People might be playing dumb, but you can never make the assumption. You just have to like just assume that they're tracking what you're doing, what's going on.
And on that note, also keeping in mind the brew theory, right? So like if, for example, great example of this, when I was in top 16 of Silicon Dynasty, right? I'm playing Timna Malcolm from Ben. I'm playing Alana on Blue Farm. I'm on Tibbet. And then we have Slicer in our pod, right? Now, normally I see Slicer in the pod and I go, I don't know what the fuck this does. It's probably a piece of jank thing that this person showed up with, whatever. But I'm in the top 16. I see Slicer in my pod and I go, okay. So whatever this is, whatever gimmick is going on here, whatever sort of nonsense is happening, has done well enough to earn top cut in a 7-round tournament. That's not an easy feat. Making top cut in a 7-rounder is not easy. They go, okay. I've got to respect what's happening right over here or else we might lose to it because clearly at least three pods did not.
Exactly.
Right. So that's, it's something to note, right? Like, so if you have your Magdas in your pod or some two color background deck, like Reed was talking about, if that's in your top 16 pod, you go, okay, clearly people have lost to this. Either A, because you've broken the format, congratulations, or B, more likely, because people didn't get what happened, and then they lost.
And then also, like, for that stuff specifically as well, it's, like, not even a bad idea if, like, you see Slicer in your pod, and you don't know what it's doing, but apparently it's done well enough to get up here, and you don't know what's going on. You literally, pre-game action, before I even do my first mulligan, I ask the table, hey, what's going on over there? What are we looking at? Like, what's the problem? What's
absolutely.
The game plan?
Like, and you know, for a fact, like, in that pod, Ben, Alana and I, we sat down and we were like, okay, what the hell is this card do? All right, let's talk about how people are losing to this thing. Right.
Exactly. And because like, even if the rest of the table doesn't know, you guys can at least sit down and brainstorm for a second just to get on the same page about like,
absolutely.
Okay, if we all need to work together to not lose to this, cause it's a Cody deck or a Rockside deck that's like hyper tuned to be fast. Let's have that discussion so that we're not just like blindsided because we all kept mid range hands. We're just going to die. Right.
Now, in a perfect world, you have these discussions in every pod.
Top 16,
they feel a little clearer. They feel a little likelier. Yeah. You know?
And that's also the other thing about top 16s is that top 16s, I don't know. It feels, at least in my opinion, it feels a lot more comfortable to play in top 16s because the quantities are like more known, if that makes sense. And it's also like, I don't know, I feel like I have a better rapport with the average top 16, top four pod than I do with like the average, just like.
Well, so here's been my observation of what happened is this is just Callahanisms. So take this for what it's worth, is, you know, a lot of my theory on success in, you know, playing Commander at a competitive level is your ability to communicate with the table. And I have seen this reflective in top 16 results, especially at in-person events, is that players who are good at talking with the rest of the table tend to end up making top 16 in those events and getting to the end. Because this is one of the things that I don't think enough people understand that separates competitive EDH from competitive anything else, is table talk is an integral part of what's going on in the game. It's not politics. Mm-hmm. It's not whatever you want to call it. It is just communicating. This is what's going on. And you
I want to springboard off there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, like, you will hear, like, especially when I was on my, like, early Mox Masters tear, like, the commentators would be like, I don't get how Ian is tricking these people into doing what he wants, right? Yeah. Or, like, shit like that. Yeah. And I would be like, well, observer, I'm not tricking these people. Yeah. I'm having a fucking conversation with these people and going, this thing will kill us in a turn. We got to do something about it.
Yeah.
And instead of lying down and just taking it and conceding to another player at the table, I work with the people around me
to not lose the game.
And eventually I will play the cards that leverage my win. Yeah. But at first, it's not a bamboozle. It's not pulling. Like, I'm not in the middle. Yeah. Like, if I was doing that shit every time, the first time I won a tournament, people wouldn't fall for it anymore. Yeah, if it was all me being like,
I mean, there is a reason. Like Ian. So Ian, you watched your first season of Survivor this year with Lua, which, congratulations, welcome to the club.
Not my first season of Survivor. It's my first season in like 10 years.
Okay, so it's your first real season. That's not true. Old Survivor's great.
Survivor's good. Survivor. Fuck you.
Old Survivor's really good. Survivor Outback's fantastic. Anyway, look up horror stories of that season. It is fantastic how many bad things happened on Outback. But anyway, so there is a reason I compare playing Magic to Survivor, because Survivor is, in much of the same way, you are playing against everybody else, but you also need to work together with them a little bit to like not lose. So it's like, you can't just go at it on your own. This is like something I try to communicate to people, where it's like, if you can't talk to the rest of the table, you're not going to do well. Like, that's just,
as much as I hate hearing about this theory, I completely agree with this theory.
Well, thanks.
Actually, yeah, as I guess that is,
and Blue Farm is like an immunity idol.
No, I see, your immunity idol, in my opinion, is Silence or Grand Abolish. But
Ranger Captain, how did we just skip down the list there? I will say, though, as like an additional point on the sort of on like table talk, talking about specifically table talk in the context of top 16 tables, if you are a very talky player or a very political player, as I am, as I'd say Ian is, maybe to a lesser degree, I feel like I enjoy the sound of my own voice more than Ian does, but maybe only by a minor amount. If you are a political or like table talky player, and I feel like that's a large part of like the grinders of the format at this point, just like you just it's an essential skill that you just pick up even if you're not naturally that way. The table talk and the politics at a top table look very different from the table talk in Swiss rounds. If you're very used to being able to strongman your way through table interactions of just like talking at the rest of the table until you're doing something vaguely beneficial to you, it's just not going to happen at a top table. Like, you're going to talk the rest of the table. They're going to be like, great, that's awesome. You can take another 10 in the air because I need you dead, and that's fine. And then like, you're like, I need this Grand Abolisher because reasons. You're like, that's super cute. I'm going to mana drain that. And then like, I'm not letting you do anything. I need this Rhystic Study. Yeah. Trust me, I need this Rhystic Study. Great. Eat a Besage, you get out of here. We're playing the game still.
I have pointed combat damage and player removal at people because I found them unreasonable. It's like, especially genuinely, because, I'm like, I'm going to kill you first because you don't fuck around like everyone else does. We all are here willing to talk.
Yep.
You're a psycho. You're dead.
Yeah. Especially like in decks, especially, or in positions where you are at a point where you're killing people with combat damage, it makes even more of a difference, because if somebody's being unreasonable, they're like, it's much easier to do predictable combat math and figure out like what order you need to kill people in if you have some semblance of an idea of what they're going to be doing or like what types of actions they're going to take in certain positions.
Here's something I really want to point out, and this is just sort of in this same space. This is something I've been seeing more and more as tournaments happen lately, where someone, so for example, say you're, this person's playing Rog Silas, right?
Yeah.
And they go, okay, hey, feed my Rhystic study because I want to get answers for this person.
Yeah. Just.
And you, they're tapped out. They've already used their Fierce Guardianship. Yeah.
Super great.
Don't. Yeah, especially like I, someone, yeah. Someone tried that shit with me. I'm playing Timna Jeska. They were like, oh, keep casting spells in my Esper Sentinel so I can get an answer to this person. I'm like, you have maybe an answer in your entire 99. Are you gonna look at my face right now and be like, don't worry, I'll save us, you POS. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Just don't pay for the Smothering Tide. I understand I have 7 cards in hand. It doesn't matter. I need the mana. I need to be able to fight this stack war.
Yeah, cool.
Super. Yeah. You know what? You have 2 lands right. Untapped. I think you're fine as is. I think this is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, you have to, it becomes very different where it's, mm-hmm. you have to get into the habit of, it's not talking at the rest of the table. And a lot of the time it's not even like doing this is probably a majority of my politicking in open pods. Ian, I'm assuming it's some amount of yours as well, of like incepting people like ideas into people's heads of like, you should be doing this thing because it's beneficial for you. And then it's also just on the down low beneficial for you as well. And that's how you take games and like get people out of position to take wins.
Yeah, for sure.
That doesn't work to the same extent at all at top tables either. It's a lot less about tricking your opponents into taking lines of play that give you percentage points and more about negotiating and figuring out lines that you just makes both of you not die and will profit both of you relatively equal amount in terms of at least like evaluation from both of your ends, because you just like
your top table with like Koval at Oka was that way, Ian, where it was just everybody shitposting, you guys were just like constantly putting out fires.
Nick who was the head of Monarch at the time walked up to me and said, Ian, I've never been more tense and laughed harder in a game of Magic my entire life, because it went from you guys making jokes about every card being a man-eater bug to then immediately, as soon as a spell was on the stack, everyone went into serious mode. And it's it's everybody who's trying to be social and fun for the entire day, because we also, you know, this is a hobby and we all fucking have fun.
Enjoy BSing with people. That's part of the reason why we're here.
Right. Yeah. And like, then we can still put on serious face too, right?
I mean, yeah, that's I could probably talk about that in and of itself, about how like so much of what makes competitive EDH, in my opinion, like compelling is the multiplayer aspect. Like, if you take the multiplayer aspect out of it, I'm just like, I don't care.
It's 90% boring. Of the format. 90% of the format is the multiplayer aspect. The other 10% is the fact that the commander deck building process is very interesting.
Yep. Oh, I was going to say the other 10% is Mana Crypt, but you know, you boo.
you can chop up fast mana and let me snort that shit any day. I love it. Oh man.
Put it in every format. I'll be okay.
Stacks, so like, yeah. I don't know.
You need to cut the Sorwing from that one, man. You need to get down to the 2 artifact life. 2 artifact life is great down here.
No, the real one. The real one is
when you're on a Charles.
You're not going to Charles me.
What about Chromox though? I mean, it's card disadvantage.
The amount of collector oof decks with Chromox make me want to commit crimes. They make me want to burn Canada.
Ian, you don't understand my internal need to be able to cast Thrasios on turn 1. It's just a biological need. I need to be able to cast a turn 1 Thrasios.
And you know what? Then I don't play fucking collector oof.
I've said this before. I said this to somebody that we were talking about Arden Tana, and I was just like, you know, it's okay to play a green deck that doesn't have collector oof in it, right? Like, yeah, you're allowed to do that.
I won't get into this, but I mean, Orcish Bowmaster like changes the math on this completely. But at one point, I would have.
I mean, Orcish Bowmaster changes the format completely. IMO.
Yeah. Like, oh no, 100%. As in, like, you're just sort of you're just sort of not allowed to play creatures anymore. For the most part, there are like creatures that you need to like have in play for multiple turns to do things. Super fun.
Yeah.
But at a certain point in the past, before these spoilers happened, I would have said that you had to be in a place where you're either playing Dockside or Collector Roof, and I think it's probably incorrect to be in a place where you're not playing either of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think Orcish Bowmaster gives a fuck about Dockside. Like, I think
Dockside is now by far. That's the math that it changes, is that you just can't play Collector Roof anymore. Dockside's fine. Dockside's great. Better than it's ever been. Yeah,
I'm a big fan of creature decks. We're in trouble.
big fan of just like playing games where you're not just trying to be the second person to resolve an Orcish Bowmaster, which is like basically my experience playing since that card. Anyway.
Yikes.
Well, we haven't talked about that card on the show yet, but tune in next week for our Is Lord of the Rings Tales of Middle Earth the set that breaks the CEDH?
Yes. Yeah.
No, we're legally, it's legally not the same thing. It's not the same thing.
You just keep going to the background. We can cap off this episode if you want.
Yeah, it's all good. I would love some background music. Honestly, that is up there with
loop me doing the Hobbit. Yeah.
that is up there with you and I in a Rebels video doing the Avengers theme.
I forgot about that. Oh shit.
Go over to Rebels YouTube channel, everybody, and there's a great video of her gameplay series, and the video starts off with Ian and I being complete goblins with the Avengers theme. It's great.
To be fair, Sinestra had just bullied us for 5 hours playing a casual deck, and it was 2:30 in the morning.
It was 2:30 in the morning. Rebel wanted to play CEDH. You and I were exhausted.
Yeah, we were manic for sure.
it was wild. But anyhow, well, I think that doesn't cover everything, but honestly, I think we got a good hour's worth of a podcast in there with
that's
30-ish minutes of, you know, fun in there somewhere. Sure.
We can use something.
Some of this is salvageable.
We got cow like 5 learnable points this episode. That's, you know,
probably
fine, right? Probably like 5 like learnable moments.
Things that
actually like matter to somebody listening to this.
Yeah.
Well,
The entire episode is actually a meta commentary on how you should be acting in these pods, because we've been joking and shooting the shit the whole time while occasionally coming back to the serious points, right? And so that is in itself the behavior you should be reflecting in these pods.
This was on purpose. This was intentional. Yeah,
this is.
We did this on purpose.
Do you get it? Do you get it, audience? Are you on with the joke now?
You're taking up what I'm putting down here.
How big our fucking brains are.
Ian, are you sure you haven't been breathing smog?
Nah, dog. This is that Bean Town sauce.
Just that Bean Town water. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you both for joining me this week. Thank you all in who are listening for joining us. If you like the show, want to support us, well, before we even get into that, Reed, how can people, where do people find you? What are you up to on the internet if people don't know?
I was about to plug my Twitter, and then I realized that like I just don't
care. Don't use Twitter.
Do you want me
to get you over 1,000 followers? We can do that.
I really don't care. I got up to like 666 at one point. I was like, nice. And then I went over that. I was like, yeah, cool. Nothing matters to me anymore. I don't know. Into the North. Check out the decklist database. Go play in your local tournament. Support your local scene. Do that for me.
Tip your waiters and waitresses.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Support your local unions, etc.
Yeah.
Fuck the Pinkertons. There's my plug. Fuck the Pinkertons.
Yeah. Unless it's Pinkerton Ob. In which case.
Still fuck that deck. That deck is like it's fun, but like my lord. The fact that you're basically tracking when you don't have an Obnixilis in play, you're tracking five separate Rhystic Studies that all trigger off of separate game actions, and you, the only thing that you get out of it is pinging your opponents for one. It's the worst. It's like, okay, so you cast that spell using two islands and a non-basic land. You get pinged for one apiece from the islands because I have a Scald in play, and then three for the lands that you tapped. These are all non-basics, and I have a mana barbs. And then also, because you cast a non-black spell, the Sudum's going to ping you for one. Okay, we got all the triggers in the stack? Great. You take seven, that's all I had to do. Great.
This is fun. We're having fun.
We're having a huge amount of fun.
It's Ian, for the... I can't imagine there is a cross... there might be some amount of cross-section of... our audience on the Mind Sculptors that doesn't cross over with your audience on Comedian Maybe. MTG.
But it's like the 10 people who used to comment in the MLC that I was toxic.
How can people find you and what you're doing out in the Magic community?
Toxic bitch. So hello everyone, I'm Ian from the YouTube channel Comedian MTG.
It's you can a super find... serious YouTube channel too, is my favorite.
Dude, that's the weirdest. I know I'm definitely gonna be adding some more content on there that's a little more lighthearted, but yes, it's very analytical. If you want to, you know, as I mentioned, like the, you know, it wasn't just tooting my own horn earlier. Like, if you want to know what's happening in the top 16s of like a lot of major tournaments, I cover almost every single one of them. That's kind of the focus of the channel because I liked having that information and I wanted to put it out there to people. So if you care anything about tournament CEDH, come check out the largest tournament CEDH channel on YouTube currently, Comedian MTG, youtube.com/@ComedianMTG. You can also check me on Twitter, which is a little less specifically tournament stuff, although every time I'm in a tournament, I post every round with like a short Twitter version recap of what's happening every round of the tournament, every time I'm in a big one. But also, I sometimes post, you know, shit posts and memes and a bunch of different crazy stuff there too, just for entertainment. But yeah, check out those twitter.com/comedianmtg. And also, if you heard me lightly plug it earlier in the episode without trying to actually do a plug, I do provide CEDH coaching. So if you want to receive coaching from the most accoladed 2022 CEDH player, you should check me out. You can hit me up on Discord, on my Twitter at comedianmtg@gmail.com, any of those places you can find me, and just hit me up, send a DM, and be like, hey, I want to get coaching, and I can hook you up.
So you know what's wild? I just realized this. So Reed, you know, so you're technically the longest running CEDH podcast, right? You've been on the air the longest, right?
I think Spike Feeders have us beat up by a bit, but
well, they aren't a podcast or channel. Like, but you're like specifically podcast. Fine.
I'm not going to take a hard yes on this, but sure, for the purpose of this conversation. Sure.
As of 3 days ago, 84 gotcha. Episodes of Into the North.
Yes.
Today is the 100th episode of the Mind Sculptors podcast. Nice. And I completely forgot to mention it during the entire episode.
But what we hit celebration. Listen to us talk about bullshit for 25 minutes.
It's just the most quintessential Mind Sculptors podcast.
Right? Honestly, like is there a better example of what this content is than what this podcast has been? But yes, thank you to everybody who's supported the channel, supported the podcast over the past 2.5, almost 3 years, which is fucking wild. But yeah, 100 episodes. It's really cool. Everybody who's listening and the people who are sitting here are the reason I get to do what I do every day, and have made my life infinitely better. I cannot stress how much I appreciate everybody, whether it's the people that I do the show with, people in the community who support the show, just it really does mean a lot to me that I get to do this, and this is my job. This and then editing videos for people, which is also fun. But like the fact that I get to do this is really cool. So thank you everybody that's out there. If you want to see me continue doing it, head on over to patreon.com/themindsculptors. Also, if you want any Mind Sculptors merch, you can head over to themindsculptors.com/shop. You can get your merch there. Anything else? I think that's it. Thank you for joining us this week on this 100th episode of the Mind Sculptors. I'm Callahan, and we'll see you next time.
Tell me what you want.